Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, the show for people who want to maximize their marketing potential. My name is Katya, and I am your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy and everything in between, each episode will feature industry experts that share their insights and provide actionable tips to help you achieve your marketing goals. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for our guest today, Carrie Melissa Jones. Carrie, thank you so much for joining me on the Grin Gets Real podcast. I'm really excited to dive into the whole building a brand community and listening to your expertise. So let's get started. If you could just share a little bit about yourself and kind of what your expertise is in building a brand community.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you, especially anyone building advocacy or influencer programs. I'm always very excited to talk to people doing that work specifically. My expertise is really in building online communities. So I have spent the last 15 years building, moderating, managing, architecting, helping others build online communities of all different types. And what I've realized over those years is that no matter the purpose of the community, the structures are all the same. So from a political campaign to a very technical product, the bones are the same in a community. And so I help organizations understand everything they need to invest and then customize that for their purposes.
What a fun job.
Yeah.
You obviously wrote a book on it, which, you know, that's how I have gotten to know you, and I'm obsessed with it. I'm on my second round of reading it. So for all the listeners, it's Building Brand Communities. It's an excellent read. And you're right. Anybody that is looking to build a community, which is why I picked up your book, there's such great insights in it. Now, before we do get too deep, I kind of feel like community has become a little bit of a buzzword, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to claim that they have a community. So out the gate, let's define what a community is and what a community is not.
Okay. So a community is a group of people who share mutual concern, period. They have to actually care about one another in order to be considered a community. Now, people will say all kinds of other efforts are communities. You can say anything is a community. I could say all of Facebook is a community if I want, but it doesn't actually function to actually create the kinds of outcomes that we hope will come out of building a community if we don't have that mutual concern.
Bearing in mind that definition, then what's customer advocacy then as well too? Because, and I'm really curious as well too, because I'm building out brand community for Grin. I'm taking a look at that, and the caring part is really key, but customer advocacy is also something as well too. Is that separate? Mm-hmm. Is it the same when it comes to, you know, living within the brand?
Yeah, this is such a great question. It's actually the question that prompted the book in the very beginning, because I had just finished working with an organization who had called what they were doing a community, but it was really a volunteering effort. So they would pick a bunch of people to say, okay, you're now our influencers and our advocates. Here are the messages you will disseminate on our behalf. And then they would just sort of try to figure out ways that they could increase the rate at which people share those messages. So that is not all advocacy programs, but that is how a lot of people organize and manage advocacy programs, is this sort of top-down approach of saying, here are the messages we want to be shared, and then here are the people that can share them. And then a lot of times this program will be extremely transactional versus based in actual relationships. Yeah. This is where people start to feel taken advantage of. They start to feel like a megaphone or an infomercial on behalf of a brand. I've actually had a client come to me who one of their influencers had told the New York Times that they felt like they were an infomercial, not an actual part of something bigger, which is what they were calling it, was this community. And so advocacy efforts can be community efforts. Community efforts can fuel advocacy, but a lot of times they're named interchangeably, and they're not actually built with the structures necessary for success in the long term.
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were talking about that, it sounds like using someone as a mouthpiece to spread the word, right? A walking billboard, as opposed to in an influencer situation, finding someone that actually likes or would use
whatever it is that you're selling, it definitely becomes much more authentic in that way. But as a brand, how do you distinguish that? And not just by defining it, but like in the creation process, do you start with customer advocacy to build on and create a community? Or is it backwards? Do you work on the community first and then out of that comes customer advocacy?
I always recommend that latter approach, really working on the relationships and the community first, because you're moving slow in order to move very quickly in the future. It takes a long time to build trust and relationships, no doubt about that. But once they're in place and there's trust there, then the actual longevity of that relationship will increase tenfold, if not much, much more. Versus if you start with advocacy and say, okay, here are our messages, and then hope that a community might form from that, it does happen. But generally speaking, we start with a group of people who care about one another. We figure out what they have in common, and then we might actually start to advocate on behalf of them. It could be a movement, it could be brand messages, it could be a lot of different things. And it's really important that those things help those people become who they want to be. Just sharing, you know, affiliate codes and just hoping that people like click on them and buy products, for instance, does not help someone become who they want to be. So when we're creating an advocacy program that is also a community, we have to think about how does this advocate or ambassador, how does them being part of this program help them make progress toward who they want to be in their lives? Because if people aren't making progress or not making connection in that way, they won't participate. And you'll see that reflected in your metrics.
And I like the approach that you're talking about. I'm completely sold on it. But there's got to be, I would imagine, some sort of framework for creating that. Mm-hmm. For lack of a better word, kind of a guide. Where do I even get started? Again, the reason that I picked up your book was, okay, I want to build this community, but how do I even go about it? Where do you get started with something like that?
Yeah, this is often a question that I get, especially from brands that are used to going very large, very fast.
Yes.
Like, you know, we have an email list of 10 million people. So let's just blast them with an email and tell them that this community exists. That is never where you begin, at least not if you want to create something sustainable. So you have to begin small. And this is something that Adrienne Marie Brown, she's the author of Emergent Strategy, talks about, this idea that small is all. How you begin is going to set the stage for everything else that you do in the community. So it has to start with really no more than 3 people, maybe 10. And you start with that founding member group. So find the, let's say you start with 10 people, find the 10 people who you know exude these ideals, these ideas that really, really matter to your organization, and work with them to start to define, what is it that we're doing here? What should we be doing here? What are we missing? Build that founding member group. And then from there, you can actually start to first introduce those 10 people to one another. They might not know each other at that point. And then their networks open up to your organization. And from there, you can grow exponentially. But if you just start with 10 million strangers, I can tell you how much success you're going to see from that. It's going to be awkward.
Well, yeah, and you bring up a really good point. Like 10,000, that's really hard to introduce 10,000. And you can be invisible in a large group versus a smaller group. Now, you had some great insight that I remember reading in regards to even running kind of like a community event. Like there is definitely a limit of how many people can talk to one another feasibly in a group. Can you kind of expand on like what's that ideal group for meeting to build those connections to then bring to the broader group?
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of research on this and it depends on what your goals are. So if your goal is to make a decision, for instance, the research indicates that no more than 50 people. And that is even really, really pushing it, because what you get is social loafing, which is one of my favorite terms.
Social loafing. Tell me about that.
I just see like a big baguette like sitting on a table.
I know. I don't know if it's because I'm hungry, but that one, it piqued my interest. Tell me about social loafing.
Yeah. So this is it's a part of a theory from communication and the social sciences that when you get a group of people large enough, there will always be some portion of that group that is able to sort of fly under the radar and not contribute. Yeah. And we see this in communities as well. It's not something that we will eradicate in our work. It's human nature. And our work as community builders is to ensure less of that if possible, and that we create groups in which people can actively contribute and don't feel like, oh, well, no one here sees me, so it doesn't matter if I contribute or not. But this happens in groups of four, I know, because I teach undergraduate students and there's always one or two in a group project who disappear, you know, and it's not fun.
Do you think that it takes a mix of different personalities to really create engaged community? And the reason that I ask that is when you're talking about, you know, even in a group of four of undergrads that you can see that, it reminds me of like back in college, I was a communications major. I guess I still am forever, lifey.
Same.
But there was a distinct difference between departments, right? Like the personalities are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Do you think in order to build a brand community, you need all of like these extroverts? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely not. It depends if you're creating something purely online versus purely offline or some combination of the two. What a lot of the research indicates is that you need people, regardless of personality type, who care about other people. So have empathy for other people, not just people who think, oh, I'm the expert, so I'll tell everyone what I know. And then you can't just have people who are like, I don't know anything. Please impart your wisdom on me and I will take it and absorb it. You need people who want both sides of that coin and who feel like they can be part of a collaborative environment. So that's regardless of personality type. And I identify as an introvert. And, you know, my role might be different than someone who's really extroverted in a community, but it's critical nonetheless. You need all types.
All types of people to, you know, make it happen. I also identify as an introvert, a social introvert, because I'm never the quietest person in the room for sure. So community, I think, is incredibly important. And like we had already talked about, it is becoming a little bit of a buzzword, but I think it's really important to find people that really identify with you as a brand, speaking from a brand perspective. How serious do you think brands should take building a brand community? Do you think that they're missing the boat if they don't invest in really building out a community for their business?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I obviously believe that like all organizations should care and be community-led organizations. But the reality is that there are some organizations in which the leadership or sometimes the individual contributors are not ready to be changed by what a community will show them, will teach them. So what they really want is people to just do what they say. And hopefully, in some cases, what I see a lot is hope that they can reduce spending on customer service, for instance. So they'll start a brand community that is kind of a Q&A site where really excited customers can help other customers. They're not really willing to listen, though, to those people. They just want them to kind of take work off of their plate, but they don't want to be transformed by what those people might teach them. And so I see a lot of those efforts fail. A lot of trust is broken. I think it's almost more harmful to launch something like that and then ignore or manipulate and extract from people than it is to just keep going business as usual. So I would say organizations are missing out 100%. I guarantee it. If they are not building some kind of community, that could be internal to their team, their organization needing a community. Yeah. It could be, you know, their partners, their vendors, their customers, their prospects. There's a million ways you could build community in your organization. If you're not doing that, you're missing out on knowledge, basically, is what you're missing. And leadership has to be ready to recognize that as knowledge in order for it to be successful.
Well, I definitely agree with that. And you said something incredibly interesting in regards to not just letting them have the conversations and being a listener. One of the things that I'm trying to balance as we build out our own community is I want other people to engage without my meddling. But what does that balance look like from a brand perspective? Like, how involved should I be? I want to get the conversation started, but I don't want to be the one that's taking up all the oxygen in the room, right? You kind of want them to grow a little bit organically. So what does that balance look like?
Yeah. So the beginning stages do generally require you to be kind of that middle person, making those introductions and starting that conversation. But over time, you should be able to step out and the structures and relationships should be able to sustain themselves. So in the beginning stages, I would say plan to be in there meddling a lot. Don't always jump in with your advice and your answers. Instead, your job as the meddler is to find the people who can answer questions or who can participate in things and bring them together versus you saying, okay, here's the answer. I've got this for you. So that's really the role in the early stages, is to find the people and organize them. And then over time, people will already have those relationships in place. They will know who to go to when they have certain kinds of problems or want to work on certain kinds of projects, so that you can step out and the community structures can sustain themselves, because there's norms and other things that are in place in the community. So I hope that.
Yeah, that makes sense. It definitely does. It makes me think of really being the person in the room that kind of knows a little bit about everybody, because you're the one that invited them to the party, right? And you're mm-hmm. just like, hey, so-and-so, meet so-and-so. Mm-hmm. They have XYZ in common. And I think that you guys can really connect on that, because you mm-hmm. have like this shared, it's always about figuring out how they can have a shared pain or joy or really anything to really make that connection and remember that person and be able to go back to them when it comes to that. Now, you said at the beginning stages as a brand community builder, you would be definitely more involved, but let's talk about like the maturity stages of that community, right? At the beginning stages, it definitely makes sense. It's a bit of a smaller group. You're trying to make those connections, but what does my community look like as it's going to evolve?
Yeah. So a lot of times what I see in my clients' organizations is that they will grow out of that stage, and there's a little bit of a kind of pain point at that part where it's like, okay, I'm right in the middle and I need to start backing up.
Yeah.
And that can be really hard, especially if you care about the people in your community. You feel like, oh, these are my people and I can't just like mm-hmm. let go. So in order to grow, though, you have to move yourself out of that central position. So over time, you'll go from these individual relationships that you've helped steward into stepping out and creating structures. And what you'll see in the data, if you're looking at metrics in your online community, is you'll see that there are more participants actually engaging with one another without you being part of the conversation. So that's an indication that you're moving from this early stage into something a little bit more mature. And so a lot of times I'll look at, in terms of building client dashboards, I'll look at what is the moderator to member ratio of content. So over time, that ratio should go from moderator, like very high, and member potentially quite low, to yeah. switching and members being quite high and moderators being a lot lower. You'll also start to see and create more segmentation in your community. So I generally recommend starting with one group and then starting to create subgroups or channels from that main group versus starting with 15 different channels and then just hoping that enough people will be in each one. So I will often do kind of like an incubator stage for subgroups and segments. And then what you'll do from there is actually help steward leaders to lead those groups on your behalf, so that they can, again, become who they want to be by being leaders in your community. And that's the only way to scale these efforts, is to develop leadership within the community. That's not just you, but it takes a lot of time, a lot of trust to build that. So I see this sometimes taking anywhere from you know, 3 months to 18 months to get to that stage. It just depends how invested that person already is in the community. So a lot of times the community manager is part of the community to begin with versus building from scratch.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that you gave it a time frame and that it was such a wide time frame. Well, because I think that we all want it. And especially if you're used to, as a brand specifically, growing fast. Like, mm-hmm. No, I want it now. I've got this big group. I think that is why the knee jerk is, oh, no, I have this email list. Let me blast it out. Everybody will want to come. Mm-hmm. But it does definitely take time. I think when you look at marketing in general, there are things that take time. SEO takes time to like really build it up. And so does creating that community. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking really from like the brand perspective, but I would imagine, and I don't know if you've worked with influencer groups in general or creating an influencer community for a brand as well, I would imagine that there's a lot of overlap from a brand perspective as there is with like building an influencer community. What is that overlap? What do you see?
Yeah. So I have done this several times with organizations, principally like consumer products organizations, makeup brands, beauty brands. And what is generally missing in the influencer efforts that people try to create when they don't have a community mind working on the program is solidifying a larger purpose for the group. And I think that whether it's an influencer program or an online community forum that you're creating, purpose is the bedrock of everything else. If you don't know what your larger purpose is, you're going to have a lot of challenges as you try to scale the actual community or the influencer effort. So it's not just enough to say our purpose is to get 10,000 brand impressions this year or something like that. I don't even know if that's a lot. I don't look at stuff like that.
Hence the 10,000. No, it's okay because I think that you bring up a really good point. I think it's hard to quantify a community in general, but you know, the question really stems from that transactional and relationship that you had brought up earlier, right? There is a spray and pray approach when it comes to building a community with influencers that I think some people take. And then there is the slow, methodical, more let me build that community. So when you're talking about purpose, to your point, it's not, okay, my purpose is to get 10,000 impressions, right? That's an objective, right? Mm-hmm. Like as a marketer, my objective is to get that. And by way of influencers, ambassadors, creators, whatever it is that we want to call it. But what kind of advice would you give on introducing that to a potential influencer? I mean, do you say, hey, I want to use your audience? You definitely wouldn't say that. But like, how do you introduce, okay, I want 10K impressions, you're going to help me. But how do you introduce your purpose to an influencer, to another person?
So it has to be infused throughout every aspect of the experience of the influencer program for that to be successful. So everything from the invitation, what does the invitation look like? Your purpose should be part of the invitation. Like, this is what we're doing here that's unique. You can't find anywhere else. And this is who we'd like to help you become. So I worked with a brand, for instance, their influencer program was all around fitness coaches. And so a lot of them were female entrepreneurs, really, is what it boiled down to. They just happened to be in a very specific niche. What they realized was that a lot of them didn't know how to market themselves online, and that a lot of them didn't know how to build passive income in addition to their work being coaches. So they introduced and invited people to be part of something that would help them become more effective as entrepreneurs, as entrepreneurial women. And so that was really the purpose. And then that grounded the invitation. It grounded the onboarding. They created a whole hub of education for these women. And then they gave them a chance to do classes online to introduce their work to other people. They introduced them to one another so that they could give each other advice on growing their businesses. And then over time, I mean, actually what happened at the beginning of the pandemic was that a bunch of them actually got together and gave out a bunch of product to nurses who were part of the first responder effort, because they realized, okay, we've had all this success now. Things are really hard, and we want to find some way to give back, because their big, big purpose, in addition to, you know, helping these female entrepreneurs thrive, was that they believed that women's leadership is the future. And so they started to become leaders in their actual communities, and then they gave back to the women. And they also donated a bunch of their profits to an organization in Morocco, who they were all female farmers. So yeah, it has to be grounded in every aspect, and then that can kind of flow out and bloom from there.
It sounds so time consuming to have this approach to building a community. I mean, is it fair to say that you need to invest quite a bit of time in order to really to establish those relationships and nourish them as well?
Yeah, I do think it's fair to say that that takes time. And this can be really frustrating, especially for I've had a CMO actually like walk out of a room before saying like, well, this is great, but we know that we can get ROI on, you know, clicks on our emails. For some reason, people are always comparing community to like what we could do with our email list, which I think is very strange. It's like your email list can be part of the community.
It's the biggest gathering of community members that are not really community members. They're just part of a list. I do think that you bring up a good point. And I think that in marketing, we're always up against that. We're chasing attribution. We're chasing ROI. There's always this need for proof that this is worthy the time investment. And I think that's why I also bring up time, is that it does take time. How do you pitch like, hey, I'm going to take a lot of time to build these relationships that I'm going to get a lot out of personally as well, just in general, because it's this human to human interaction. You know, what do you say to brands or even like a CMO like that of like, hey, no, I already know it's working. I don't necessarily need to invest in this, invest my time in building a quote unquote community, you know, and not that they would be that snarky, but do you know what I mean?
They were. Yeah, that was one of the worst days of my work. I try to use the metaphor, like preach to the converted more so than to try to change people's minds who really are like so focused on this transactional effort. So I won't generally bother, you know, to spend my time trying to change someone's entire outlook, because it's a totally different way of viewing the world, of viewing business. And it really comes down to what kind of a future do you want to create as a leader? And so if I can speak to a leader on that level and talk to them about, you know, do you want to create something sustainable, long-term that nurtures human beings? Or do you want to create like this throwing spaghetti at the wall approach, like this short-term burn and churn, just quarter after quarter, hopefully you see returns. I mean, this is part of a much larger conversation going on around what is the purpose of business right now? Is it sustainable the way that businesses are run for short-term gains? There are certain leaders, and I work and I coach with a lot of community managers who have leaders who resist a lot. And I will help them to build out sort of an 18 month. It's always 18 months. That's what I'm always looking at, is what is the timeline for 18 months? What can you let them know they can expect in 18 months? There's probably some short-term, extremely valuable things you can tell them that they will receive, such as product feedback, customer loyalty, and trust for a small group of influential people. So making sure that you're able to tell an executive, okay, here's what you'll see in 3 months, 6 months, you know, 9 months, and then all the way into 18 months, so that you're able to tell that story and not just wait 18 months to say, okay, this worked or it didn't. Really thinking about, okay, if you were to gather those 10 people in the very beginning, what are going to be some of the outcomes? And when you can justify that, then you actually have a case for building something sustainable over the long term.
I don't know how you feel about this, so I'm just going to throw it out there, especially when it comes to that correlation of SEO and then building a community. SEO is definitely a slow burn, and so is building a community. But in marketing in general, there's a balance. There's never like, okay, just do all of this. Mm-hmm. Just do SEO and do community, and then you can do like the fast stuff. I always think that there's a balance. Like SEO is a slow burn, but you can use paid to help support that and speed up the process so that you can get like those net new gains. And the way that I would see it from an influencer community is not just an influencer community, just a community in general, is like, okay, what are those quick wins that you can get from that community? How do you feel about balancing that? the slow burn with like a little something that's a little bit more fast acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's exactly how to think about it and start to conceptualize, okay, what are some of the short-term things we can do? One of the ways I see a lot of my clients do that is through product feedback councils and or customer advisory boards. Huge way to sell the value of community to an organization, because most people understand that gathering a core group of people who are really in the weeds using their products or services is really, really valuable. So product feedback, but then also gathering people through events and things like that. So online events are now so simple to set up. If you just try it like 10% harder than everyone else, like people are wowed by it right now. They're just like, oh my gosh, you're actually interacting with us on Zoom. Like, this is amazing. So things like that in the short term, so that it's not just, you know, we're only gathering these 10 people and that's it. You can continue to gather people in regular cadences through events before you invest in something really huge. Like, let's say you build a giant community platform on Koros or something like that. Conceptualizing the short and long term is really important.
That's great advice. I promise I only have a couple more questions, or hopefully it's only a couple more. Okay, so now I have my community. What is your advice? What are your thoughts on how to keep that community engaged, and how often do you keep them engaged? And to provide some context for, you know, building out a brand, is it sending weekly newsletters, right? Mm-hmm. Is it putting on webinars? Is it putting on a clubhouse, you know, room? Like, what, how often do we engage in these communities that we build? Or is there even an algorithm for something like that, or, you know, a best practices?
Mm-hmm. As far as I know, there's no algorithm for something like that.
I'm always looking for the formula.
There are people working on that for sure. I would say that needs to flow from your purpose. So if you're, you know, gathering really, really busy people, maybe you don't want to be pinging them all the time, like on a daily basis with emails. Maybe you don't want to send them a weekly newsletter even. Maybe it's a monthly newsletter for them. So you really have to consider who's in the group, where do they like to be talked to, and so where can we then remind them to come back and participate in this thing? But consistency in that is really, really important. So people shouldn't just not hear from you, let's say, for 3 months. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're hearing from you again. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure if I answered your question.
It does.
You asked about bringing people back to
it. It does answer my question.
Yeah. The other thing is that there are 7 different types of content and programs that you can create that will build long-term community. And those are covered in the book. I'm not going to go through all 7 of them right now. But you can balance those out over time so that you're not just, for instance, like just doing webinars, and you're not just doing, you know, weird happy hours that have no agenda, which were very popular, you know, back in like March 2020. And now people are like, get out of my face. So there's a balance. You need a balance between educating people, building friendships within the community, collaborating and co-creating things. And it can go on and on from there. So just balancing is really important in your content planning.
I like that. You know, it's tying it back to your purpose. It's making sure that you have a good pulse on the bandwidth that your community has as well, too. Mm-hmm. So that's perfect. Okay. Prediction time. Based on what you're seeing now, how do you see brand communities evolving in the next year versus like the next 5 years? Or can we even see down the path of like 5 years?
In the next year, I am certain that we will just see more community efforts. I'm seeing this from a business perspective. I have never seen the volume of incoming requests that I've been seeing over the last 6 months. Right when the pandemic began, there was a lot of fear in investing in anything long-term, right? For those like first 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
We all just thought, oh, we'll go back to normal. And then when it became abundantly clear that that was not the case, what happened was everyone said, oh my gosh, we have to find a way to gather people digitally. Mm-hmm. Our teams, our customers, our, if you're an association, the members of your association, there's no way for you to have your annual conference. How are you going to keep people talking to one another when they can't actually see each other in person?
Yeah.
And they realized that not only do they have to do that for a from a business solvency perspective, but it's actually an incredible opportunity to not just engage people once a year at your conference, but to create something that is a place where people can come and meet each other at any time, and not just have to wait for this annual face-to-face event. And they're not barred from participation because of their location or they can't afford to be there. So it's so much more accessible. There are some major advantages to building a digital community. So over the next year, I don't know what's going to happen with the vaccines. I'm not, but I can say with relative certainty that there will never be a world in which we don't have more hybrid approaches to gathering people. So it's not just going to be, okay, we have this offline community. Now there's going to be a hybrid between we have all these online ways of gathering people and we also gather face to face. Maybe that's through user groups. Maybe it's through a conference if we can meet in big groups ever again. But it will be the boundary between online and offline is already very, very blurry and it will just become even more so over the next year.
Well, that is a great way to just kind of end cap our talk about just building a brand community. I really appreciate you taking the time and just talking shop about how to make it happen and happen successfully. So thank you so much, Carrie. I hope to have you on again when you write your second book. I'm going to throw that out there on the wish list, write another one. Thank you again so much.
Thank you. This was a blast.
During my chat with Carrie, we defined what a community is and then dove deep on how to get started, what the evolution of that group looks like, along with the value of building out that community for a brand. And while the concept seems simple enough to understand, it's often misunderstood. There are essentially two types of approaches, transactional and relationship. Transactional being a game of numbers, the community is there for you and it's very one-sided. Versus a relationship-based community where you have like-minded folks that share a purpose and care about one another. They are fully vested in seeing each other grow. This type of community provides the most value for a brand and is even the best approach to creating an influencer community that delivers. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I wouldn't mind if you gave us 5. And leave us a review. If you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. That's grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.